This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, for more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. If you get a chance to rate our podcast on your provider, we'd appreciate you taking the time to do that. And now, today's podcast. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. I do appreciate you being with me. It's all about above average investing for the average investor. We try to bring you some useful information and answer questions. We do it live during this 1 hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Or you can leave your question on our 24-hour listener line, and the number is always the same, 888-99-CHART. And we'll do that in just a minute. There are more important things than chasing returns. Everybody wants to make money. Of course we all want to make money, but chasing return, that's not the way to do it. There's a real power in having a plan. Okay, having a plan. Powerful ways to boost your 401k returns 2017. That's one of our talking points. And, you know, not just 2017, but for many, many years. You know, the same kind of plan for your 401k. Most investors focus on fundamentals of the market, and particular and specific stocks in particular, which is always first and foremost. You should always look at the fundamentals of the stocks that you're buying. But during times of uncertainty, it can be technical analysis that will help you decipher the next market move. Fundamentals tell you about the company, tell you how healthy that company is. That's what you're, and you really want to buy healthy companies. Everybody does. You obviously, you don't want to buy unhealthy companies. Technicals gives you a hint of what's really happening. What, you know, because the technicals represent all the buyers and sellers of that company or the entire market. What all their efforts are trying to tell you, and you can get a hint as what direction the market's going to go or is going or why. You know, there's different ways to look at technicals. The most basic knowledge, when you're looking at technicals, and remember, technicals is just the movement of a stock chart, the price action of the stock, its movement. And their support and resistance levels are extremely important because, and I've mentioned this many, many, many times, reading a chart, understanding support and resistance, understanding all the technical aspects is nothing more than an art. Not a science. It tends to be true. Okay, tends to be true where there comes into support or resistance or the trend line that is in. It tends to be true that that stock stays in the trend. So it's. I don't want you to get carried away with, you know, you can make, you know, and you have all these people telling you how much money you can make, secret ways and reading technicals to make lots of no. They are important. Technicals help you know when to buy and help you know when to sell. So I think it's very important that you learn these things. I do. But the fundamentals are the most important aspect by far of any company that you buy. The fundamentals of that company. So I want you to understand technical patterns, and I want you to use them. In the end, it's all about discipline and recognition, and it takes time. So understand technicals, but base your decisions on buying the stock on fundamentals. Do you have questions about these two forms of analysis? You may have something else you want to talk about. That's fine. I'm ready for any money questions you might have. 888-99-CHART. Let's go to the phone to take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hey, Steve, Justin. How you doing? Thank you for doing such a great job and great information. There's a company out there, okay, they want to teach me how to do options and short the market. It cost about $6,000 to $12,000, and they'll teach me how I can short the market and make money all the time. And they say, I guarantee you, if you buy the program and go with us every day, we'll guarantee you double your investment. I don't know. Is there companies out there that actually really do this? Thank you.
There's companies out there that actually try to sell you their method. Sure. Think about it logically. Step back and say, okay, someone is trying to teach me where I can double my money over a certain period of time. Why would they not teach anybody and just do it themselves? If it's such a moneymaker, why do they have to sell you for $6,000 how to do it? Why don't they just do it and make billions of dollars? That tells you right there that it is not right. I don't buy into it for a second. Don't, and you shouldn't either. Think about it. Step back and okay, they're promising me they can double the money. Why don't they do it? They're the experts. They're the ones selling you the system. Why don't they do it? Reason being, because it's not that easy. That's why. Can you make money doing it? Of course you can. But, you know, most people don't. Just telling you, most people don't. Powerful ways to boost your 401k returns in 2017. That's one of our main talking points today. Yesterday, I never got to it, but I am going to get to key technical levels on the S&P 500 and the Dow. And I want to talk about Fibonacci numbers. Did you look at that? Did you look at the Fibonacci? Did you look it up on Investopedia? So we're going to talk about that today. Also, the Fed fund rate increases. What are going to be the basic consequences of the increases? I'm talking about, you know, more practical consequences, not whether it's going to kill the economy or boost the economy or change or make the dollar stronger or weaker. I mean, practical to you and me and what we do with our money. So I want to talk about that a little bit. And did you see GameStop today? GameStop. I don't know if you remember. I talked about this a number of months ago, maybe even a year ago. I don't remember how long ago. And I remember clearly talking about creative destruction with GameStop. Did you hear what they're doing today? They announced today they closed 150 stores. And we're going to talk about creative destruction again. I'm going to talk about it so everybody knows it by heart what that is. There's a book out there called Creative Destruction. I want everybody to read it. If you're investing money in the market, you need to read it. Those are going to be the talking points. Of course, the main talking point is always what you want to talk about, not me. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. Jason in Chula Vista. How are you doing, Jason?
Good, good. If I were going to use a trailing stop, or do you even recommend that at all? How would I use it?
Jason, I don't really care what kind of stop you use. You can have a trailing stop. You can have a certain price that you change every day because the stock is moving up and you want to tighten up stops because of what's happening. Jason, all I ask is for people to have some kind of system that they're using. And if it works, keep it. If it's not working and you're getting in and out of stocks too fast, then that means your system needs to be tweaked.
Okay.
But there's nothing wrong with trailing stops. A trailing stop is when, let's say the stock is moving up and it has been moving up for months here or weeks. You keep moving your stop up as the stock price goes up. That means if it's 8% off its high, you get out.
That's what I'm looking at. Rather than going in and adjusting just a regular stop periodically, I'm looking at just putting a 5 or an 8% or 10% trailing stop.
That makes sense, Jason. Well, the time you'll take a look at it and say, what percent should I put on this stock is you got to look at the volatility of that individual stock. For instance, some stocks go up 3 to 5% a day and down the same amount. Well, an 8% trailing stop might be too tight. Maybe a 10% would be better or, you know, a 12%. But if a stock only goes up very small and down very small and it's on an upward path, then you could tighten up the stop. Make it a 5% stop.
Okay.
Look at the individual volatility. Just having across the board doesn't necessarily always work.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the call. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. 888-99-CHART is our live listener line number. And it's always open every weekday. We're live right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
How about if I go to Jim in Chula Vista? Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks for calling.
Sometimes I've heard you say the price of a stock is $18.75.
Yes.
And you're going to place an order?
Yes.
But you don't buy it for $18.75, you buy it cheaper.
We try to, yes. Yeah, we always bid less.
Okay, so in other words, when you get ready to do a trade, like on Scott Trade or something, it'll have a bid and ask price?
Yep.
Okay, I didn't understand that. That's what I wanted to find out.
Yeah, on our stock market, all it is an auction. Think about an auction. Someone is trying to sell you something, and someone else is trying to buy something. You guys got to get together on what price you want to pay for that. Well, you don't want to pay what someone is asking. You know?
That's right. You always want to get it cheaper.
That's right. We never go to what they're asking. You know? I mean, but it's hard sometimes because we see what everybody is asking. You know, we see the depth of the market where it might be difficult for you as an individual to see it. We know that there's a bid there for this much and a bid there for this much. There's an offer for this much. You know, we see it. And we say, well, I'm going to put mine right here. And we wait to see if it comes and catches us.
It's kind of like buying a house. They'll have an asking price. And then you say, well, that's a little steep, I think. I'll give you $450,
exactly.
But they're asking $480.
That's exactly what it is, except that you're talking about a piece of real estate called a stock.
Right. Very clarified. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jim. Appreciate the call.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Let's go to Mike in San Diego. How are you doing, Mike?
I had a question about loaded versus non-loaded mutual funds.
Okay.
You know, obviously, the prudent guy would err towards the non-loaded funds to kind of save money and
right.
initially up front, return right. on your investment, that type of thing.
Yes.
But I recently read something on, like, A shares versus B shares and some of those arguments.
Right.
And I was kind of confused on what is the actual benefit of a loaded fund, or is there any?
I will always tell you, never buy a loaded fund because you can find just as good managers in no-load funds. So why buy a loaded fund? And let me explain that to the other listeners. A loaded mutual fund is one where you pay a commission to buy it. There are no-load funds, meaning no commission funds out there also. A loaded fund is sold to you by somebody, and they make that commission, usually 5%. A loaded fund could make up that 5% and make a ton of money and would be fine. You could do that. But the loaded fund has to overcome that commission before you start making money. So the process is, why buy a loaded fund when you can buy a no-load fund and you don't have to have that, you don't have that hurdle? Of course, there are some very good managers in loaded funds. But there's also very good managers with no-load funds. So my take is always buy a no-load fund. That problem is that means that puts homework to you to find them. A lot of people don't want to go through that work. They just go to a broker and let him decide,
sure.
and he'll put you in a loaded fund because that's how he makes his money.
Now, what about the
A shares, B shares, C shares?
How does that play into?
When you talk about loaded funds, they have different ways to charge a commission. Sometimes it's upfront 5%. Those are called A shares, Mike. They're always upfront 5%. You give them $1,000, they're going to take 5% of that right off the top, and you're only going to be investing, $950.
Right.
That's A shares. B shares they're going to charge you that same 5%, but they're going to charge you only 1% after each of the next 5 years. 1% of whatever the value is after each of the 5 years. These are what these A, B, C, D, and goes on and on and on. Different methods of getting their commission from you. Now, if you ask me which is better, A shares, B shares, C shares, I will tell you A shares up front. Why? Well, because if you bought B shares and they charge you 1% a year, they charge it on the value of the fund. So the fund grew 10% the first year. You're paying 10% more fee.
Yeah, exactly.
Second year, if it grew 20% over the 2 years, you're paying 20% more fee, 1% again.
Okay.
So A-shares, if you're going to buy a load fund, I'd rather see you buy A-shares.
It's not like a bond rating where it's the quality of the investment.
No,
okay.
It has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
Nothing, Mike.
That's where I was confused. Okay.
Okay?
Great, thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Yep.
This is InvestTalk. I'm Steve Peasley. 888-99-CHART is our live listener number. And we're live, of course, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday.
You're listening to
an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
And let's go to Sin, or Sai, in Oceanside. How you doing, Sai?
How you doing, sir?
Good.
I'm a beginning investor.
Okay.
I have a question about OCT. Are they stock, or if you buy it, are they easy to sell?
Over the counter?
Over the counter tray, right?
Oh, these are, you're talking about pink sheet stocks. They call them pink
sheets.
Oh, okay. Over the counter, it's called also pink sheets. And the reason why they call them pink sheets is because the way people file them, they are on pink paper. Don't ask me why. That's where it came from. To me, most pink sheet stocks will go out of business. Okay, I'll let you know for sure. You can make a ton of money, or you can lose all your money on these stocks. And it's really not a good idea for as a beginner to even mess with any of them. They're too risky. They're very low priced, and they're usually manipulated. People push them up and down and take advantage of other people buying them. They're too easily pushed up and down. The liquidity is too small.
Okay. Thank you.
Sai, I appreciate the call. Let's go to Brent in San Diego. How are you doing, Brent?
Hey, just fine.
Thanks for calling.
You know, I had a question on the PEG ratio, the PEG, price to earnings to growth ratio.
Yes, sir.
What's it for? How do you use it? And what's a good one? What's a bad one?
Very good question. We use GEP, but many people use PEG. Same thing, but just the inverse, okay? GPE is growth to the price earnings ratio. PEG, PEG, is the PE ratio divided by the growth. So it's the exact same thing, but the inverse. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We like to use GPE. The good number, you asked me what a good number is? 2 on a GPE. On the PEG, it would be 0.5. And that would be 2 times the growth rate of the PE ratio. The PE ratio is 10, you want a stock to be growing at 20%. The PE ratio is 30, you want a stock that's growing 30%. What does it do? A company cannot have a PE unless it has E, earnings. So if you have a PEG, that means you are buying a company that at least has earnings. Now, it's a question of how fast it's growing those earnings. The better the PEG ratio, the lower the number on the PEG, PEG, 0.5, 0.4, 0.3, 0.2, the better it is. That means a higher growth it is to the PE ratio. Now the GPE, which is the same thing but the opposite, you want a 2, 2.5, 3, 3.5, up, 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 the higher the number, the better on the GPE. So it ensures growth, Brent, ensures growth and earnings in a stock you're buying. That's what it does. So they're very, very important.
Steve's next date for portfolio reviews is April 25th. That's in San Ramon. And of course, no matter where you live, you can take advantage of these checkups by Skype and telephone. Just go to investtalk.com and look for the Invest Talk tab and then portfolio review.
888-99-CHART. 3 powerful ways to boost your 401k. Now, these are just general rules, and I like the rules, okay? And the first one is bet across the board and keep your money on the table. In other words, stay in the market and don't bet just on one tiny sliver of the market. You can use an index, the S&P 500. But if you had different funds, large cap, small cap, mid cap, bet across the board. Don't just bet in just one thing. Especially if you have, 10 years out. You don't know what sector is going to do well. Unless you really want to be an expert in this field and want to study it, then you really don't, and if you're 401k, you're working, that means you're working in an industry or a different job that's not this industry. Don't try to outguess it. You can't. And that goes to the second point, is that you probably should stay passive. In other words, indexing. There's nothing wrong with it. It works really good long term. In the last 35 years, how many years did the market go up? The index, the S&P 500. The last 35 years, how many years did the market go up? If you stayed passive and stayed in the market was up 30 years of those 35 years. So don't try to outguess the market. And third, have a plan and stick to it. Invest your money and your 401k money just all the time. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. And have a plan that this is what you're going to do for the next umpteen bazillion years. Really, as long as you're working, you should be investing in your 401k. 888-99-CHART. Love to hear from you. We're going to talk about different things this hour. I really want to get to what are Fibonacci numbers. I like that. Yeah, I just like saying it. Fibonacci. Coming to terms with investing. Here's an investing term you should understand. What's a derivative? A derivative. You've heard about them and how they ruined the financial markets in 2007 and 2008. Well, a derivative is a security, some kind of security, like a stock, but it's not a stock, but it's some kind of security with a price that is dependent upon or derived from one or more underlying assets. It's not the asset itself. No, it's another kind of instrument or security they come up with that derives its value from an underlying asset. Derives it is dependent on that underlying asset. So it's a contract between two or more parties that based upon the assets or asset. Its value is determined by fluctuations in the underlying asset. And most common underlying assets are stocks, bonds, commodities, and we have properties, mortgages, interest rates. 888-99-CHART is our number. You can reach us right now on any topic on investing.
Our podcast continues next. Here's good reason number two for a portfolio checkup with Steve.
You need to rebalance your portfolio.
Reducing risk is the number one priority for everyone these days. In a low interest environment, you crave those great returns that stocks can give, but you're afraid of the risk. So what's the formula?
If you're younger, you want to have more exposure to more risk. If you're older, yes, you can have less risk. But the balance of high tech or blue chip or dividend paying stocks,
there's got to be balance.
You need to rebalance your portfolio.
And Steve can help you in person in California or via Skype or telephone from anywhere in the USA. To schedule your one-to-one, one-hour checkup with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
I'm retired. My call is about 401k as well. I rolled my 401k into an IRA. I parked it, but is there anything you can roll it into that when you take it out, because I have to take minimum distribution, I'm over 70, or getting there, that it could be taken out as, what do you call it, capital gains or less than ordinary income? That's the biggie. Okay, thank you.
The answer is no. Whenever you take money out of a retirement account, whenever you take it out while you're at the proper age, retirement age, and you're 70 and a half, so you have what's called required minimum distributions from the IRA, you have to pay income tax on it. The government makes you because they want their tax dollars. I wish they wouldn't. I don't think it's a wise policy. Fundamentally, I think it's an unwise policy by our government. Wouldn't it be better for everybody to save and have as much wealth saved as possible instead of making them take it out? But that's a philosophical difference. But no, if you take money out of your IRA and you're over 59 and a half, you have to add it to your ordinary income for that year, the amount you took, and it is taxed at whatever your ordinary income tax rate is, unfortunately. And the idea is when you're in retirement, hopefully you're in the low tax bracket and you don't have to pay as too much taxes on it. That's the hope anyways. Yeah, well, hope springs eternal, right? Bruce in Chula Vista. How you doing, Bruce?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, and I appreciate your call.
I'm 27. I'm a U.S. Marine here in San Diego. My wife, she's 26. We have a little bit of extra money here that we can invest, let's say, for our retirement, like Roth IRA, which people have been recommending that for us to do. I've heard, too, that if you invest in a Roth IRA, especially if you don't have any experience, they invested in mutual funds. But supposedly, mutual funds, well, it's not a great return because the way they do it, I guess they trade the good stocks and keep the bad ones. Am I totally lost here?
A little bit, Bruce, but the concept is very good. And Bruce, first of all, let me say thank you for serving the country. You know, Marine, man, that's a tough thing to be. You have to go through a lot. I have a cousin who's a Marine. I have also a brother-in-law who is a Ranger, an Army Ranger. I know what you guys have to go through. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now, Bruce, you got to start a Roth IRA. You're 27 years old. You're a young guy. Your wife's probably a young woman. If you do it now, you'll be rich by the time you retire. If you just put money away in a Roth IRA. And okay. Yes, a mutual fund, there are good and bad mutual funds. That's the difficult part, Bruce.
Okay.
So the question is, you just got to find a good one. I don't mind helping you. If you want to call me at the office, you don't have to hire me. I'm not talking about it. I will give you some names, okay, and say, here's a few names to invest in. These have great managers. There's no commissions. You don't pay anybody. You can open up direct with them, an IRA, and there's no cost. If you don't mind giving me a call in the office, I'll give you some names and phone numbers and stuff.
Perfect.
Because mutual funds are what's called prospectus items. You're supposed to get the prospectus, which nobody reads. You know, I can't recommend anything on the air. That's the problem.
Awesome.
Okay, here's my number. 800-557-5461.
5461.
And you just asked for me.
Thank you very, very much.
Thanks a lot, and we appreciate that. And I really do appreciate the Marines. Thank you very much. Steve, Santa Rosa, how you doing, Steve?
Given the volatility that you are speaking about, as a fairly non-sophisticated investor and someone with not a whole lot of money to invest at one time, how do you feel about whole life insurance products and the cash value and the rate of return that those can give you and the lack of volatility there, too?
Okay, Steve, let's just let you know, my background is insurance. I worked for years and years and years in the insurance business in New York City. I'll tell you, the whole life, the universal life, I really think that they do you a disservice. If you need life insurance, I've always suggested to everybody, just buy term life. It's really, really cheap. Just do this math, Steve, if you would. Take the difference between term life, you know, the premium you had to pay. Let's say you had to pay $20 a month. And then to get the same coverage, same amount of life insurance coverage for whole life, take the difference and then start doing the math. Just put it, do a factor like they do. Use the same factor the insurance companies do to determine how much your gains are going to be over the next 10 years. You'll find that if you do it yourself, just buy an index fund in the stock market, using their same numbers, the insurance company's same numbers, you'll be light years ahead in return. Why? Because insurance companies charge a lot of money, a lot more than you imagine on that management of those funds for you.
Okay.
I would not do it. You'll be a lot further ahead if you buy term and just take the difference and invest in the stock market over time.
What about the fact that the whole life is tax-deferred going in and tax-free coming out when you pull that benefit or that cash?
It's only tax-free if you annuitize it. There's capital gains tax are being built. It's tax-deferred. It's not tax-free unless you turn it into an annuity at the end of that period. And then annuities are even more expensive. It would be a lot smarter to open up a Roth IRA or a regular IRA and put that money in there.
Okay.
Just do the math. That's all I ask. Or I'll do the math for you. Call me at the office. I'll show you. And I don't sell insurance products. I don't care. I just don't like them. I worked in that industry. They're not bad. I'm not saying they're bad. It's just that I know you can do better in a different way.
Even without the risk? I mean, the insurance products I see that I'm at least looking at seem that there's almost no risk.
Yeah, they like to tell you that. It's amazing how they like to say that, but then they tell you to invest in the stock market, or they invest your money in the stock market, because they know in any 10-year period in history, the stock market has always gone up. That's how they can say that. The annuity part, they like to guarantee your returns. They'll never go below this if you did. But you know what? I meet too many people that are still stuck in their whole life and universal life, and they really can't get out of it. If they sell it early, they'll get hit with these big tax bites. Steve, I'm telling you, it's not the best way to go.
All right, thanks.
Good luck. Thanks for listening.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is our number you can call anytime. The Fed has raised rates twice, once in December and once last week, right? So now the federal funds rate is 1%, and that's the rate that the Fed charges for banks borrowing the money from them. And then, of course, meaning the banks, passes on to you to higher rates for your loans. But it also has other consequences and long-term consequences. One is, are we finally going to get some decent returns from our savings accounts and our CDs out there? It's still very low, but as the Fed raises the rates, that will change. You'll finally get some return that may be over the inflation rate. Right now, you're not getting anywhere close to that. So that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. You can, hopefully that you'll finally get some returns there. Also, you can take less risk for income because yields on bonds, and of course the CDs and savings, but yields on bonds and yields on certain instruments are going to go higher. So you'll find, and just the quality will not go down, but the yields will go up. In other words, you'll make more. So that's a good thing. Now, I want you to also be careful of the long-term maturity of bonds and other instruments based on interest rates. When interest rates go up, long maturities go down pretty hard. So long maturity type instruments are bonds, most common are bonds. They'll go down. So will preferreds. They'll go down in value, because they're long term and raising rates hurts them. And finally, stocks in certain sectors will benefit. The ones that won't benefit, in general, as a rule, the stocks and sectors that won't benefit with rising rates are those who use a lot of debt to grow their companies. Usually, in a rising interest rate environment, consumer discretionary stocks, info technology stocks, industrials do pretty good. So that's kind of where you'd want to be. But in general, just think of it logically. If you have a stock that has lots of debt and has to refinance that debt, and interest rates are going up, they're going to have to pay more for it to refinance the debt. So it's going to cost them more. So their profits go down. And even if it's only small, the profits affected only small, investors look at it as a negative. So they could drive the stock price down much harder than the actual impact from rising rates will have on the stock. You gotta remember, investors push these things too far either way, up or down, stock prices, based on what they think is going to happen. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's our number. Let's go back to our 24-hour listening line. You can call anytime you want. 888-99-CHART. Steve had a question from Fremont, California.
Hey, I just want to know, what's the advantages of just investing in a regular IRA over investing in, say, blue chip stocks?
Okay, I hate to tell you this, but you're not understanding. Okay, you don't invest in an IRA or a 401k or a Roth IRA. You don't invest in it. You invest in a stock. You open an IRA account, okay? And from that account, you put money in it, and then you invest the money you have in it into a stock. An IRA is a type of account. It's like a joint account, an individual account. These are titles of types of accounts. So you don't invest in a type of account. You open a type of account, put money in it, and then invest from it. Okay? So the advantage of an IRA is that the money you put in it, up to $5,000, and $6,000 if you're over 50 because you have that catch-up, you get to deduct that $5,000 from your income tax, and you can then invest that $5,000 inside that IRA and by buying stocks or mutual funds or ETFs. That's the advantage of putting money, opening an IRA, putting money in it, and then invest from it. That's the advantage, and it's a very good advantage. If you have a 401k, you should do that one. Do that first, especially if the employer matches. That's the first thing you do. So try to make sure we understand here. There's types of accounts that you open up, you put money in. An IRA is a type of account. Buying a stock is an investment. It's an equity. It's a stock that you can buy, and that's an investment, okay, of the money that you have in a particular type of account. Hope that's clear. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, remember, we love beginner questions. Everyone who listens to this program either is a beginner or was one at that one time, so we welcome your question at 888-99-CHART. Now, what is the question?
I have to say that I'm kind of new to this game. I'm an engineer, so that's kind of what I do. So I was intrigued. I read a year or so ago about option trading.
Okay.
And so I've been studying up on it and doing some, fake trades, paper trades, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally actually started a margin account,
uh-huh.
A little one, $3,500, as a hobby.
Okay.
I've doubled the money so far, so I figure that's okay on little stuff. However, my concern is, with options, there's quite a bit of trading. And I heard something the other day on your program that concerned me about taxes. Because
yes.
I just have a straight margin account, and of course, I trade frequently. What do I need to do or know about my taxes?
Almost all that's going to be short-term capital gains and losses. Okay. And as short-term capital gains and losses, you need to track. It's going to be all at your income tax rate. So that $3,500 you made is going to be taxed at whatever income tax bracket you're in.
I guess what I'm concerned about is, there's so many trades, and of course the brokerage firm I'm with, you have all the paperwork that
they're
trades
only,
it.
Dan, they're only going to send you what's called a 1099. And that 1099 is not going to suffice for your tax guide. What you need to do is set up a spreadsheet for your buys and sells. Just track every buys and sell post, the date you bought it, the date you sold it, and make a column for short-term capital gains and a column for long-term. And I have a feeling every one of these trades will be under 12 months in duration.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Every one of them will be a short-term, so you don't have to have a separate column. So every one will be a short-term. And if you just print that spreadsheet out when you get your 1099 from your brokerage firm and attach it and write Schedule A on it, is what I do, by the way. And I put, whatever the gain is, hopefully it's always gains, right? That's what we think, Dan.
Well,
and then write Schedule A on the appropriate tax box in your tax return and just put the total number and say, see Schedule A.
My concern was, I started with, say, just $3,500.
Yep.
The minimum amount. If I was to lose money, I would claim that as a loss, and if I gained money, that would be a gain. All this other stuff I was worried about, some trades I made lost, of course, and some gained. But it's only on the total at the end of the year that you're taxed.
Correct.
Right?
Your losses always offset your gains and vice versa. So you never have to worry about that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Matt in Cupertino. How you doing, Matt?
Thanks for taking my call. A quick question for you. I was curious in your opinion versus mutual bond funds or individual bond ladders.
I would rather see you buy a ladder of individual bonds than bond funds.
Mm-hmm.
You know why?
You tell me.
Bond funds, now, you got to remember what a bond fund does. It buys a bunch of bonds. So you get nice diversification. That's a big plus, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the net asset value of that bond fund will go up and down depending on interest rates, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if interest rates are moving up and you have a bond fund, the net asset value of that fund will go down. You'll still get your yield, in other words, the dividends that are coming in through those bonds. You'll still get those. But if your yield is 5% and the bond fund net asset value goes down 5%, you're no further along. If you buy the bonds direct and you buy a good spread of very safe bonds, I'm not interested in high risk stuff. We're talking about very safe stuff. If you buy them and hold them to maturity, they also will go up and down in value, but you will always get your money back plus the yield if you hold them to maturity. Whereas in a bond fund, that doesn't happen, even though they may hold them to maturity, but the bond fund value goes up and down based on the interest rates. So you can buy a personal bond, and you can buy it, hold it, and it will go up and down in value, but if you hold it to maturity, you'll get that money back. That's not necessarily so in a bond fund.
Makes total sense. You saved me a few hours.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate the call. We have a program that does buy bonds. We hold in maturity inside there. So we know that they'll go up and down in value, but we'll get the yield, and they'll go back to their par value when they mature, so that you don't have that huge risk of a bond fund that will go up and down. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm glad you're here today. Don't save the questions, everybody. We still can fit you in the last segment of the hour. 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's go talk to Todd in Lakeside. How are you doing, Todd?
Oh, good, Steve. How about yourself?
Good. How's it out there in Lakeside?
It's a good deal. Like good. It.
Yep, it's a nice area.
You know, Steve, I had a couple of questions, but for one thing, I guess I'm struggling a little bit on trying to figure out the value of stocks.
How to project the value of a stock?
Yes.
Okay, this is how you do it. I'm going to give you two methods, Todd, and none of these methods are perfect, so don't always think they're perfect. They're not.
Right.
One method is good for medium-sized companies, not too good for really large companies and not too good for really small companies, but in the middle, the bulk of the companies out there. You use the earnings per share estimates for next year, and you multiply that times the growth rate of the earnings per share. So let's say the earnings per share this year is $1, and the earnings per share next year is $1.20. That's a 20% growth rate, right?
Okay.
You take that 20, multiply it times $1.20, okay, and that gives you a projected price for that stock. Now, if the stock is selling below that amount, that's what you want. If it's selling above that amount, it might be overpriced. Now, it doesn't work for very large companies because they don't grow very much.
Okay.
Now, it can be if the company was just beat up to smithereens price-wise, and they're only growing 8%, let's say. You know, let's say they're Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola can grow, 10% a year maybe? And Microsoft? These big, huge companies can't grow. But if they get beat up enough, the valuations will work. Now, the other good way to use,
hang on, let me back you up for a second, though. You say the earnings per share for this year and next year, is that all four quarters combined? Average?
Yes.
Okay.
All the four quarters, the whole year. How much is the whole year is going to be worth?
Okay.
And the other method is look at the P.E. ratio range for the target company you're looking at for the last 5 years. And let's just say the range is 10 to 30. Then you take next year's earnings per share, multiply that times 10, and then also multiply it times 30, and then you get the range of the price of the stock should trade at. And if it's at the very low end of the range or below that end of the range, that's a buy.
Okay.
Now you just look at a chart and decide where you want to buy it.
Right. I'll have to play around with that one a little bit.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. GameStop announced they're going to close 150 stores. They announced it today. And why? Well, if you remember right, we've talked about this some time ago, and we talked about creative destruction. And I mentioned that GameStop, while still making money and doing well, I was a caller way back then, and I said I would not have much faith in it because online downloads and online participation of games, why do you need to go to a store to buy it when you can buy the game over the internet? And high-speed internet, it just seems like to me that business model is going to kill GameStop. Well, now they're closing 150 stores. This is the first time they ever closed stores. They've always expanded, not shrunk. I would stay away from GameStop, but it is it's a classic example of creative destruction. And there's a book out there called Creative Destruction. Classic example of a business model getting destroyed by a better and new business model. And you know what, everybody? We want this to happen. This is very healthy in our economy, extremely healthy. Let's say you're a more dictatorial type economy in a government, and you say, no, we don't want any of the GameStop stores to close. We want them to stay open. We want it because of the employment. We want to keep those people employed. Reasonable, right? You want to keep people employed. Keep it open. What happens? Pretty soon, all new innovation dries up because you can't use it. For instance, downloading online games. Why even invent it? If the government's going to come in and make all these stores stay open, you got to. So it keeps the same business model. Creative destruction ceases, and then all of a sudden you get an economy that stagnates. You don't even have to believe me. You can see it happens. It's happened several times in my lifetime. There's economies and different types of economic systems that just stagnated because they had no interest in having new and better ways to do things. They wanted to keep the old ways. Doesn't work very good. Doesn't work. In the long run, it doesn't work. Our time's up for this hour. If you'd like to contact me directly with a personal message, just click on Contact Steve at InvestTalk.com and send me an email. I try very hard to answer all my emails. I really do. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for being with us today.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.